Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Bhutang dhammang sanghang namassami. So this Dhamma talk is dedicated to Venerable Cittapada, who saved the day today by managing to get rid of the problem with the audio. And for anybody who lives in this monastery, or anyone who lives in this world, we all come across these problems and difficulties from time to time. And as I often say, with your health problems, you should never say, "Doctor, there's something wrong with me, I'm sick." You should always say, "There's something right with me, I'm sick again today." Because that's the nature of the human body, to be sick. And it's the nature of audio systems to go wrong. It's the nature of life never to go the way it's supposed to go. It's the nature of the septic system to need pumping out much more often than it should. It's the nature of the water supply to sometimes run out. It's the nature of life is to be this way. And even though we struggle as human beings to try and make life go smoothly for ourselves and others, nevertheless, it's impossible to do that. And whenever you experience any difficulties or suffering in the world, always remember one of the deep meanings of the word suffering is asking from the world something it can never give you. And we continue to expect and ask from the world impossible things. We ask that this is the perfect monastery. Now we ask that all the things we work hard to build and to arrange in this monastery all run perfectly at the right time and place. And of course, that's asking something which can never be given. And we ask that this rains retreat will be your best ever. Maybe you get jhanas, enlightenment, but remember that's not the way this universe works. And if you ask for something which you can't supply and the world can't supply, you understand you're asking for suffering. So during this rains retreat and during your time you meditate, during the time you work, please accept that things will go wrong from time to time. Your job is not to ask for things which this world can't give you. Your job is to observe them. Your job is not to try and prod and push into this world to try and make it just the way it should be. Your job is to understand and accept and let it go. Because the more you fight your mind, the more you fight this world, the more you fight this monastery, the more you fight your body, just the more collateral damage you will give and the more pain you will experience. Sometimes that when we understand, we stand back from our monastic life and we see the big picture and we have enough experience of our world, either in this monastery, other monasteries, or in life in general, we have that big picture, we stand back and there's nothing wrong with this monastery, there's nothing wrong with you, there's nothing wrong with life. We understand this is the nature of the world, to always go wrong. That's what the Buddha meant by the First Noble Truth of suffering. You work so hard, put in so many hours, you really sort of struggle and strive to make this monastery just right before the retreat starts, to make your room just right, to make your body just right, to make your mind just right, and it all goes wrong. The contemplation of dukkha, of suffering, is an important part of our monastic life. We don't try, as it were, to control suffering. We have to understand it. This is an important point in our practice because most human beings make the mistake. If they experience suffering, they either try and run away from it or they try and change it. But very rarely do they try and understand it, to comprehend what this is like and what its causes are. Instead, we always run away from suffering to go somewhere else. Or we try and, you know, blame some part of the world, part of the monastery, part of the personnel in the monastery, or blame this stupid, dumb PA system or recording system which we've got. But of course, it's nothing wrong with the system. This is the nature of these systems. And you should all have been alive long enough to know that the suffering, when things go right and they don't work. So when we stop fighting the world and we start to understand the suffering in this world, we get another response. And it's that response which is the core of this evening's Dhamma talk. It's a response called Nibbida. The response called Nibbida is means that one understands that the nature of the body, the nature of the mind, the nature of the world, the nature of the senses, the nature of human beings, the nature of Buddhism, the nature of setting up a monastery, the nature of living together in a group. Do you know that it's always going to be unsatisfactory? There's always going to be problems. But sooner or later we're wise enough to stop running away from those problems. And we're wise enough to stop trying to change those problems. Instead, we understand that they're inherent in the fabric of samsara. This was one of the great insights of the Buddha, which prompted him to teach that first sutta we just chanted, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. To understand the nature of suffering is inherent in the fabric of samsara. When one realizes it's inherent, it changes the reaction. It's like having an apple. And we think that apple, the rotten parts, we just cut the rotten parts out and then we could eat the rest of the apple. But then, with wisdom, we see the whole of the apple is rotten. And obviously there's only one response. To have enough nibbida, this rejection, this revulsion, this turning away, which just throws the whole apple away and sees what's left. You see, one doesn't need that apple, though one can let it go. And it's important to understand the suffering in this world, and it's important to see just how thorough that suffering, that unsatisfactoriness, that not good enough, it's not going to work, it's not going to be in your power and control to sort it out and get it right. It's so important to contemplate that and understand that, because that is an important motivation, incentive for practicing the path. According to traditional Buddhism, when the Buddha saw the old man, the sick man, the dead man, and the holy man, those first three was enough to prompt him to seek a solution to suffering. Especially when they said that I am of the nature to age, I have not gone beyond aging. I am the nature to get sick, I have not got beyond sickness. I am the nature to die, I have not gone beyond dying. So each of those three are your inheritance. That is what faces you in your future. That's something which is certain. Each one of you will get old, get sick, and will die. And there's nothing you can do about that. That's a fact of your existence. It's also the fact of the existence that not just your own human body, but other things will get old, will sick, and die. Things go wrong. Things just break. Things just stuff up. Now, it's a reaction we have to the stuffing up of life, which is important. What the Buddha did first of all was try and find some way of overcoming that. To be the world-turning monarch, wheel-turning monarch, to have enough power to change that world. But obviously, that Bodhisattva was wise enough to know that even with all his spiritual qualities, accumulated merits, not even he could overturn that suffering. There was another response was needed. And our other response was fully understanding suffering. That's what we chanted in that first noble truth in the Dhammacakka Pavattana Sutra, where it says that first noble truth of suffering, parinyayanti, should be thoroughly understood. Now, I'm making the point that you don't overcome suffering. You don't try and change it. You don't try and make it all better or escape from it. You understand it. Which is why that when we are having any disappointments, any frustrations, any suffering at all in during this 3 months retreat, don't run away into fantasies and dreams. Don't go and run away and just reading a book or getting into some projects or doing things. It's a wonderful thing when times get tough and hard is to sit down and face suffering, to fully understand it instead of just being the weakling and always running away. It is the nature of most human beings that whenever suffering or difficulties or problems arise, that we have our escape routes, whether it's in fantasies or dreams or watching movies or listening to radios or looking into books and doing studies and talking and having cups of tea and coffee or just going for walks. But what are we really walking away from? What are we going into those fantasies for? It's always our habitual response to the problem of this is not good enough, this is not satisfactory, this is suffering, this sucks. If you really want to get somewhere in monastic life and to get wise and to become free, the Buddha said, understand this suffering. When you start to investigate the suffering and you realize, as with you, as with everybody else, that's why at lunchtime that somebody reminded me of that old story of Kisa Gotami, which each one of you, you know here, the Buddha's strategy for moving Kisa Gotami away from her grief and suffering because somebody had died, her son, was to make it quite plain to her that other people die as well, that the death of her son was not a solitary event in this universe, but was connected to every other death, and death is natural, it's part of the fabric of things. In other words, instead of trying to change the problem by bringing the son back to life, was to understand the ubiquity of the problem. It's spread everywhere, and you cannot escape from it. The Buddha wanted Kisa Gotami to understand the suffering called death. And when we understand, we don't just accept things. That's not good enough either. Just to let it be, this is the way that things are, so what? No, that's not the right response. When we really understand the problem of suffering and just what are we in for, what life is truly like, there's only one wise response. It's not trying to escape, nor is it acceptance. It's this response called Nibbida. This response called Nibbida means a disengaging. We just turn away from this thing which we call life. Trying to change things just gets you more involved in life. Accepting things keeps you involved. But disengaging is another response. The disengaging with these things means you leave them alone and you don't get concerned about them or worried about them. You're not trying to change them or to control them nor to be in them and just allow them to be. You move in another direction of disengagement. What that disengagement means is you just sit there and you don't involve your being, you know, in what you're experiencing. By not involving your being in what you're experiencing, you get this standing back, standing apart from the life, and just knowing it and not getting involved, but almost like rejecting it. When you reject somebody, they disappear. I was telling someone earlier that whenever somebody comes to visit me and starts talking to me after the meal, I don't like just to sit around and talk to people for hour after hour after hour. This is a rains retreat, so if somebody has a question, I try and make it sort of a brief answer. As you read in the suttas, the Buddha, out of compassion, knew how to dismiss people. Because sometimes people will be talking, not because they want to know Dhamma, just because they like to waste time. Real Dhamma, you don't get answers by asking questions. Real Dhamma, you get those answers by sitting still, by stopping your thinking, not by encouraging it further. Which is why that there's all these tricks of the trade, such as quickly glancing at the clock. That usually works. It's a psychology that you look at your clock or you look at a wristwatch if you're a lay person, and the other person realizes that there's other important things you have to do and it's socially not right to continue talking, and they just ask for leave to go and you let them go. What you're doing is disengaging from chit-chat. It's the same way that you disengage from the things in the world. Why are you involved in all these things? You look at them and you say that that just gets me involved, gets me tired, gets me upset. And instead one can, using Nibbida, get this sense of all of these sensory objects fading in importance. It's when you start to contemplate the suffering which we experience, it's because we get engaged with things and we try and change them. We don't understand them. Because we don't understand them, we don't realize that they're completely out of control. When they're out of control, it's like saying, it's not my business. It's a wonderful little saying that which I've used in my meditation and which I've encouraged other people to use in their meditation. It's almost like the most famous saying of Nibbida, not my business. So whatever you're experiencing in this monastery, not my business. Whatever happens in this monastery to other monks, not my business. Whatever happens, you know, to the water supply, to people coming and going, to the food which is offered, to the, you know, the weather, cold or hot, to say to it, not my business. It's not your business to worry about whether it's raining or whether it's sunny. It's not your business to worry about what I'm doing or what Ajahn Bhamani is doing or what Ajahn Jayasiri is up to. It's not your business what other people say to you. They can call you a pig. They can call you a dog. That's not my business. That's their business. They said it. It's their karma. Nothing to do with me. As I mentioned to someone earlier, that those of you who are sensitive to other people's words and you allow them to hurt you or bully you, to remember the Buddha's advice to his son Rahula to be like the great earth. The great earth, people piss on the earth, they shit on it, they vomit on it, they burn it, all sorts of rubbish goes on the earth. But the earth never complains. It just accepts everything. And they do some beautiful things. They plant gardens, or even better, build monasteries on this great earth. But the great earth doesn't move no matter what happens to it. That way, whatever other people say or do, be like the great earth, immovable. What they say or they do, that's their business, that's their karma, nothing to do with me. So they praise you, they blame you. That's nothing to do with me. That's their business. I don't know why they praise me, I don't know why they blame me. Whatever they're seeing has got nothing to do with me. So when you start saying, none of my business, to speech, speech will never be something which upsets you. You never accept another person's bad speech. nor should you accept another person's good speech. Just disengage from the whole lot. It's the same with some of the aches and pains in this body, some of the sicknesses which one has. Sometimes in meditation you just say, none of my business. It's the body's business, let the body look after it. It's a powerful way of keeping a healthy body. It's a strange thing with this body. It seems the more you worry about it, the worse it tends to get. But if you just disengage from this body, just sit still and just allow the body to disappear, it tends to heal itself. It tends to relax when you don't bother with it. I don't know why this is, but everybody knows that when the traffic lights are not working because of some power shortage, the traffic flows more freely than when you do have these traffic lights. It seems every time you try and control things and organize things, they get worse. Same with your body. When you let it go and just relax, sometimes the body gets so at ease that it tends to heal itself and things just disappear. I've known a lot of monks and things have disappeared through the power of their meditation. They just let go, forgot about things. I remember the first time I saw that was with Ajahn Tate. When I first went to Thailand 33 years ago, he was in hospital with cancer. And so, incurable, they gave him the best possible treatment. Nothing would work. So they sent him back to his monastery to die. About 30 years, no, maybe not 30 years, 25 years later he died. So it was terminal, but you know, with monks, sometimes terminal lasts 25 years before it actually happens. And it's one example of many of what happens when, you know, monks say, okay, if I'm going to die, I'll die in my monastery, bye-bye. And they go off there and they live a long time. So when you start to disengage from things, when you say, none of my business, the Nibbada says, I'm just turning away from these things. I've had enough of them. Don't want to even to look at them anymore. And you just turn to something else. You find the things fade away. That's why in the process which you read in the suttas, from Nibbida it leads to Viraga, the fading away of things. When you say, none of my business, it fades away from your world. Your just consciousness doesn't engage with it anymore, and so it just doesn't see it, doesn't hear it, doesn't feel it, doesn't know it anymore. The way the mind works is what you engage with is what grows in the mind. They call it the stations of consciousness, and there the consciousness finds a footing and grows. When you start to disengage, you got no business there, you're not interested in it, the whole thing just disappears from your consciousness. It's amazing just how many edifices we have built. We create our world. That's very clear to me as a meditator. And when you have Nibbida, you are really uncreating your world. This Nibbida saying, I'm not interested anymore. How many times you try to solve the problem? And you'll be trying to solve the problem not till you die, until many more lifetimes. Instead, disengage, have Nibbida. To see the problem, understand suffering, and disengage from it. Stand aside, let it be. You understand that this world is just the play of the senses. It's just the five khandhas doing their thing. It's nothing to do with you. It's just monasteries being monasteries, monks being monks, just cockatoos being cockatoos. Just they made this noise this afternoon. There's hundreds of them. I saw them from my hut. They're just making noise. I know some people have said they don't like the sound of the cockatoos. You know, whether you don't like them or whether you like them, they still make the same noise. So why not disengage? Why do you hear them anyway? I used to contemplate when I was meditating and hadn't got into deep states of meditation, why do noises disturb me, I used to ask myself. They've got nothing to do with me. You know, there's a sound of a bird outside or in a main hall somebody coughing or slamming a door. Why do I hear that? Why can't I sort of do the same with my eyes, find some lids and shut my ears in the same way I shut my eyes? And it became quite clear through contemplating sound and understanding how it works. The only reason I hear these things is because I went out to listen to them. There was an active engagement with the world of sound. And that's why it was disturbing. As Ajahn Chah used to say, it's not the sound disturbs you, you disturb the sound. And that was a profound saying. It meant a lot to me because I used that to understand the nature of sound and why it was disturbing. When someone calls you a pig, or calls you lazy, or calls you an idiot, or whatever, now you don't need to listen to it. Why do you hear it? Because we're interested in it. We engage with it. We're attached to that sound world. But through Nibbida, we realize the sounds come, they're nice sounds, they're crazy sounds. They're sounds of the birds, they're sounds of the crows. Some birds sound sweet, some birds, like the crows, sound terrible. It's not the crows' fault, that's just their nature. So, same in this monastery, some Anagarikas are like crows, some Anagarikas are like nightingales, some monks are the same, some speak so beautifully, some speak terribly. It's their nature, that's all, it's nothing to do with us. So therefore we disengage. When you disengage from these things, through Nibbida, things actually fade away. It's not just the suffering fades away, the cause of the suffering fades away as well. That sense world starts to disappear. When we're not so concerned with changing the world, when we disengage from it with Nibbida, we just reject it. We're repelled from it. In other words, we're moving in a different direction, out from the world. Then we go into our mind, into our silence, into our center. Sometimes you can see just how the world will pull you, how the world of your hut, its surroundings, further out into the realm of the monastery or Buddhism or your friends and who's doing what and where and how, that can so much, so often pull you outside. You can feel that pull. Nibbida sort of sees that whole world. You've been pulled out there for so many years. And what's it ever done for you? Now be honest. You know, for those of you who are thinking of going back out there in the world, if it's girls, what does that do for you? I was talking to one of the monks earlier. And I remember we were talking about magazines, and he was talking about Mad magazine. I remember the Punch magazine years ago. On the front cover, this was a joke magazine, but it was very, very wise as well. They had on the outside, the main feature was advice for those about to be married. And that was the feature, and it was the center pages had advice for those about to be married. And the two center pages were blank except for the four letters D-O-N-T. That was their advice for those about to be married. Don't. At least they understood that the suffering which is in those worlds. And don't think that you can make it different and you are special and you are wiser and you can avoid all those problems which everyone else faces. That's the arrogance of the ego, to think I can do it better. Or thinking that you can sort of avoid the difficulties and problems which everyone else faces in life. That's why when I was young I used to have fantasies. The way I stopped those fantasies grabbing hold of me was always actually following them through with the words, then what? Then what? And I would never stop. You know, the fantasies are like, you know, you fall in love and get married and then you ride off into the sunset. But I would always ask, then what? Then what? And then what? And it was the then what which sort of took all of the fun out of fantasies. Because then what was just empty. There was no colour or brightness or joy or happiness anymore. Because the then what would be whatever everyone else experiences. When the fun part just dissipates and fades away. And you're back where you started. Just boring, not really understanding what life is, trying to get by, trying to get a few moments of pleasure and happiness, and you do sometimes, but in the end, you're just hurtling towards old age, separation from the loved. And you wonder why, what's the point? But if you follow the path of Nibbida, you're just more wise, you experience enough suffering now, you've got enough data to work on. Understand it. When things go wrong and go difficulty, when you get bored during your retreat period and you're having lots of time off and boredom will come, or you've got aching legs, or you're just sitting there and just don't know what to do, you don't want to meditate, you don't want to walk, you don't want to read anything, and you're completely bored out of your skull. Investigate boredom. Understand suffering. And then it means that there's no moment of this retreat which you can't make use of, which you can't exploit for your own personal growth, advancement and training. The training of the mind is not in controlling everything, but in understanding. So when you do have any problems, difficulties, disappointments, frustrations, contemplate them, understand them. Don't run away, don't try and change these things. These are the Devadutas, the messengers of truth, come to teach you Dhamma. Which is why Ajahn Chah would always call these the Ajahns. These are the Kuba Ajahns. Kuba Ajahns don't live in Thailand, in some great monastery somewhere. That's a fantasy Kuba Ajahn. The Kuba Ajahn will be in your hut when you wake up in the morning and you're just so tired and you don't want to get up. Those Kuba Ajahns will be there when you're sitting for such a long time and getting absolutely nowhere. That's the Kuba Ajahn teaching you. The Kuba Ajahn will be there when you're on retreat. How many more days have I got to go? Or somebody doesn't put the right food in your bowl. Or you're just about to get into deep meditation, a stupid crow comes along and makes a stupid noise. Or whatever else it is which really disappoints you, frustrates you. That's an Ajahn. That's to be contemplated, to be listened to be understood and penetrated. And if you can really understand these things, you don't run away from suffering, you don't try and change suffering. You sit there, stand there, don't move, until you understand the teaching which that suffering is supposed to be giving you. Once you understand it, it does lead to Nibbida, you just disengage from that world. You disengage from the world of pain and boredom or thinking or worrying and worrying about the future or the past and what, who said what to who and why. You completely disengage from that. It's not just like a lot of old rubbish. And when you sort of disengage from that rubbish, that fades away. Viraga happens. This is nature. You don't have to make it fade away. It's not done by choice or by will. Oh, I just want to get rid of these people. I don't want to get rid of these crows. I just want to get rid of these ants on the path. I just want to get rid of all this cold which I have to feel. I want to get rid of all these other stupid monks around me. You don't want to get rid of anything. You just, none of my business anymore. When you recite that, none of my business, none of my business, none of my business, the whole thing just fades and disappears. That's what we mean by simplifying and renouncing your possessions. It doesn't just mean your physical possessions, it means all these mental possessions. These old habits and old grudges and these old ways of looking at things, which you keep possessing and keeping and cherishing, and they just wear you down. They confine you. They limit you. So all this stuff is none of my business. Everything which happened to you in your past, up until and including just a moment ago, it's none of my business. And it fades away. I don't know how many of you are prisoners of your past. You don't have to be. The door of that prison cell is always open. You can walk through it any time. You can let go of the past. It doesn't have to even work through that karma. That's just called guilt. You can completely let go, abandon, allow it to vanish. If you have the guts to do so. But of course, if you walk away, a lot of who you think you are disappears as well. Because your past is you. That's your ego, that's your atta, that's yourself. A lot of it anyway. That's why people don't want to walk away. Because they think it's their business, they attach to it, make a self out of it. And they suffer accordingly. So using the dukkha sanya, the perception of suffering, just what do I want to do this for? I want to let it all go. You walk away, you see it, you understand it, and then you disengage. And disengagement means it fades away. You just don't even think of your past anymore. Your sexual fantasies or other dreams and plans you have, you look at them, understand their suffering, and it just fades away. You don't renounce as an act of will. You understand. And renunciation happens as a direct result of understanding. The more you understand it, the more it fades. And fades and fades. It's just not part of your repertoire anymore. You look at the world outside, fades away. Which is why you can sit in your hut and the whole world fades and disappears. You can understand that this is what drives what we call meditation. Meditation is the art of things disappearing and fading. It's a vanishing, a going towards emptiness. Past and future fade away. Thinking fades away. You understand thinking. You look at it, you don't get involved in it, you objectify it, see it, understand it for what it truly is. Where does it get you? Seen that many times. This thinking is none of my business anymore. Don't try and stop it. That's called controlling it. Don't get into it. Have nibbida towards your thinking. As the old saying goes of the Buddha, thinking is like having a carcass of a dead dog around the neck of your beautiful mind. Once you understand that, gee, what am I doing this around my beautiful mind? Chuck it out. And a lot of other stuff which you carry around with you are just like carcasses of dead dogs or dead kangaroos, just rotting, smelly, stinky, dirty, foul. This is what happens. You understand these things. What am I doing it for? None of my business. You just reject it. And you move in another direction. You move away into the mind rather than out into the world. Nibbida stops the asavas. The asavas, the outflowings of the mind. You know what that's like. You can see in your meditation, you're sitting there doing nothing, and then suddenly it flows out into thinking about what you're going to do after the retreat. It goes flowing out into thinking of, you know, what you can do with your duties. It goes flowing out and write a letter to someone, or you know, flowing out into some answer to some problem with your studies. The mind keeps flowing out from its center. That's the asavas. And why does it flow out there? Because it's interested in the world where it flows to. It hasn't seen the suffering of that world yet. It hasn't understood the world. When you haven't understood the world outside, then it's my business out there. Yeah, it's a fun place. I'm going to get something from these studies. I'm going to get something from arranging all these things. I'm going to get something by organizing Buddhism in Australia. So when you disengage, all of that fades away. Its importance disappears. Because it's none of my business. It fades, disappears. And the world goes. When the world outside goes, the past and future disappears and thinking disappears. Then you have your meditation. Meditation just happens. You don't make it happen. It happens through disengagement with the outside. That's why that I really don't like it when people say, oh, just watch your breath. Come on, really watch your breath. Because you can't do that. You don't do it through an act of effort that way. It's an act of wisdom power. When you disengage with the world through nibbida, you see it's suffering. It's basically got nothing else to do. It's almost like the default position, as they call it these days. At the base where you always come back to when you're not doing anything else. So when you stop doing anything else, just past and future disappear, thinking disappears, you're silent. You can't get more of like a default-based position than that. Well, you can, but I mean, that's on the way to the deepest default position of absolute, utter emptiness and cessation. But when you start to see the world outside and see it's a suffering and see it nothing to do with me, not a good place to play in, you know, it's fantasies, thoughts, doing stuff, studying, whatever. When you see that, it's none of my business. Nibbida means it fades. When that world outside fades, you center. You do go into the mind. You do go right inside this body. It's a good metaphor. It's not accurate, but it's good enough. You go inside this body, into its mind. Past and future vanish. Thinking vanish. You have mindfulness. Mindfulness focused within. Because the outside world just doesn't grab you anymore. It's faded away. You could say detached. You disengage from that world, but because you've seen its suffering, its inherent unsatisfactoriness, that it promises you everything but gives you nothing. How much has thought promised you? How much has fantasies promised you? How much has talking promised you? And how much is it really delivered? Investigate that and understand it. Then you're disengaged. And you go in. The more you disengage, the easier it is to meditate. When I say easier, it's just meditation happens, that's all. As you disengage from that world, you just go inside. And you're in this present moment. And it's usually the case that the breath is what you watch. And because you're disengaging even from that breath, you just understand it, you know it, you never try and control it, you never try and make it any different. You soon realize the breath is none of my business. Breath comes in, breath goes out all by itself. Whenever you say none of my business and you get nibbida towards these things, they fade away. Breath fades away. What you really have in nibbida is to the physical body and the touch. You know, that's what the Buddha said, that the breath is part of the body. That's why he called that part of body contemplation. So when you just see that breath and nothing to do with me, and you disengage from it, none of my business, fades, disappears. That's when you start to get into the deep stuff, because now the body has at last gone with its five senses. And now you're flying in deep meditation, having a great time. See, when you disengage from suffering, when you go in this other direction, not trying to control the world, nor trying to sort of stay there and let it be, you're really disengaging. You start getting what you really wanted in the first place, and peace and happiness. Why is it that people try and struggle with this world to make it right so now they can be happy? Why is it they just sit there and just, okay, the world is this and I'm just going to be with it? You think that's going to make you happy? That just makes you bored and disinterested. No, not disinterested in the positive sense, but just pretty dull, and sometimes even depressed. This other way of nibbida, that leads you into real true happiness, a deep happiness in the mind. When you're so still and peaceful, because all that other stuff has just disappeared. Then you understand what suffering truly was in the first place. Five senses is dukkha, is suffering. This world is suffering. This speech, this thinking, this trying to build a monastery. Monasteries are suffering. The rain is suffering. Study is suffering. Whatever you're doing, food is suffering. Cooking is suffering. Driving is suffering. Being an abbot is suffering. Being an anagarika is suffering. Blah, blah, blah. Everything is suffering. You disengage. You go inside. You go to the place where Mara can't reach. That sounds like beautiful, free from suffering, and it's so close. You get into jhanas through disengaging from the world, not by engaging with jhanas. When you disengage from the world, when you disengage from thinking, when you disengage from the body, that's when jhanas happen. It is another default position where you're not doing anything else. And it arises when you think, all this stuff, none of my business. This body of mine, just been trying to keep it fit for a long time, trying to keep it healthy, washing it, caring for it, resting it. None of my business. You sit there, disengaged completely. And there's an Abba, I disengage from this monastery. Disengage from everything. None of it is my business when I'm in my cave. My business, I become an abbot when I walk out of that cave. When I go inside the door, I'm not abbot. Nothing to do. I'm not my body anymore. I'm not my past, not my future. Just sit there and just allow everything to fade, vanish, go. When you can disengage like that, that is nibbida happening. It leads to viraga. Viraga leads to this state of upasama, of stillness, calmness, peace. It's a beautiful thing to know peace of mind. And peace of mind is where the whole world outside vanishes. And you're just absolutely still, not moving. The mind is so motionless, it cannot connect with the body. It cannot connect with past or future. It's motionless in time, motionless in space. Because of motionless, those things fade away, they disappear. Things only exist when there's some movement, when there's some agitation. Stillness allows them to disappear. Because the senses only know when things move. They need comparison. They need two things to know. When they are still, the unity makes things fade. Which is why that the whole world outside fades. Monastery fades, the world fades, sounds fades, memories fade, past and future, thinking fades, and the body disappears. When the body disappears, and you're still deep inside, that's the jhana state. In that jhana state, you've disengaged from the world outside. The world of the five senses has vanished. That's what it means, vibhichehi kamehi. You've separated from the world of the five senses. They usually say the word aloof from. Aloof sounds like some snotty, superior, arrogant thing. It's not aloof from, it's just completely disengaged. You're distant, far away from. The whole stuff has vanished. You understand the Dharma of vanishing. Things just not being there anymore. Now you know what renunciation truly is. You renounce the world. And it's so much fun, there's so much peace. Without renouncing, I say you renounce the world, you have done nothing. Just disengagement has occurred. Through understanding, nibbida, things fading away, get this beautiful peace, the stillness of the mind. Once you start to taste the stillness of the mind, it is terribly addictive. It's meant to be, and it's great to be that. That addiction of the mind in stillness is what's going to drive you deeper towards nirvana. Attachments to deep meditations, the Buddha kept on saying, only leads to the stages of enlightenment. So you don't have to be concerned or worried about that addiction to letting go. That is what a monk is supposed to be addicted to. That is their pleasure, their joy, their path. That is their freedom. And as you go, you've got no choice. that addiction leads to more and more fading away and letting go. The nibbida increases. It just pushes you away from the world. Now you know what a monk is. You know what a bhikkhu truly is. Why we have this Buddhist path. Why you do have these amazing sort of beings who walk that path. Who know just how to disengage from the world. To allow it to fade away. And spend hour after hour after hour happily by themselves. Actually themselves just disappearing by nothing at all. Going deeper and deeper inwards. Simply because, not because they move themselves inwards. Because seeing the suffering surrounding them, none of my business, they disengage. And things just fade and fade and fade and fade away. So in order to meditate, you don't need to fix your mind on the breath. You don't need to deliberately let go of the past and the future. You don't need to silence the thinking mind. Just contemplate suffering. Understand it. Right now, whatever you're experiencing. And through the understanding, if you get to that understanding, you'll find it will disappear. The world in which you used to play will fade in its importance. The playground will not be visited by you anymore. It fades. The playground of the senses, the playground of the past and the future, the playground of sex and dreams, all that will fade. Not because you decide to. It's just nature, it happens. And as it fades away, the meditation takes its place. You don't become a meditator. Meditator just happens. It's the path, it's the route. These are just signposts on the journey. Just landmarks on the road to complete emptiness and cessation. Just what happens when you disengage and let go. So when the Buddha said that suffering, dukkha, is to be fully understood. Whenever you do experience any difficulties or problems, any disappointments, any pain, mental or physical, during this retreat, please don't reject that. Understand it. Don't just leave it alone. Contemplate it. And understand it so well to the point that it fades. And you realize it is none of my business. And when it fades away, your engagement with the world outside will be broken. And you'll start to engage with the inner world. You go in the opposite direction. Not out into the world, but in to the mind. And then through that mind into complete cessation and nibbana. And you'll be another arahant. What a wonderful thing that would be at the end of this retreat. That's the path. Disengagement through understanding dukkha. That's the talk this evening.
Satipano, Bhagavan.